Warning, the following podcast may contain people who aren't very good at golf. You're listening to the Chili Dippers Podcast.
Thank you, Duke. That is right. You are listening to the Chili Dippers. I'm your host, Luke Disco Clark. Sitting with me, as always, is Dave Cannon Ralston. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We've actually got someone on the podcast who can play golf. Isn't that right, Rolls?
Yeah, today we're going to play the interview that we had with Alan Cooper and John
Barrett.
John Barrett, that when we played with them up in Queensland a while ago. Now, these were the two of the senior guys that play on the Legends Tour. And were kind enough to play around to golf with us and then have a chat with us and tell us a few of the behind-the-curtain stories of their younger days when they played on the tour and a few of the goings-on on the senior tour today. So sit back and enjoy the stories of Alan and John.
All right, so we're sitting here at the Pacific Harbour Golf Resort. We've just played around. We've got a couple of guests for the first one on our podcast. We've got a couple of PGA professionals. We've got Alan Cooper and John Barrett. How do you think the day went, boys? Playing with the Chili Dippers. That's the name of our podcast, by the way.
Well, you lived up to your name, Chili Dippers.
There you go.
Thank you.
That's a good start. It wasn't one of the best rounds.
What were you thinking after my first drive? What sort of day did you think you were in for?
Well, it's pretty typical pro-am day. You know, that's the way they start generally.
Do they? Yeah. All right. Yeah. We play all the time, but we're a little nervous playing with blokes who play on the tour sort of thing. That's fairly exciting for all us. So we'll use that as an excuse. But we ended up being warmed up okay.
Yeah, it's only because we're good looking. You got nervous. That's
It's very difficult playing with very handsome men. It is. It's very distracting. You're lucky this is a radio show, not a TV show, you boys.
Well, you asked the question. I was wondering which the quickest way back to the pro shop was so you can get some more balls.
Well, John's played with me before, so he should be used to it. So now, look, just so you guys know, our podcast is not like a huge listener thing. So we want from you guys, if you drop as many names as you can, we want stories. If you've got, feel free to name drop, tell some stories about, if you've got stories about when you're on the tour, about women. I know, John, you've just recently got engaged, so we appreciate that. But your lovely fiancé is probably not going to hear the podcast, so feel free to say what you like. It's not PG rated, so whatever stories you got for us.
So just start off. So you were telling us just, were a pro at 15 or just off scratch at 15, Alan?
I was on a scratch at 15. I started my apprenticeship at 15 and a half.
Right. And so when were you playing for money? When you're a pro? And
17.
At 17 you're playing for... And so the Australian Tour?
Yes.
So this is Vic Opens, Queensland Opens?
Yep, and then the whole tour. I was on tour at 17.
And then straight into Australian Opens and the PGA and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
So you're 17. Who are the big names on tour that you're playing with in those days?
Dunk. Billy Dunk. Kel Nagel.
Yeah, Kel Nagel, yeah.
Peter Thompson.
So Peter Thompson's still playing those days?
Yeah, he was playing, yeah.
And how do the established pros accept a 17-year-old kid on tour like that?
Well, I don't think it was a problem. You know, everyone, golf doesn't have that problem, I don't think.
So
with,
no clicks, though, they're just happy to, yep. And so you're walking the fairways with Peter Thompson, and is it, good shot, mate, well done, how are you hitting them, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I've never found anyone really bad to play with in my life, I don't think. You know, pro golfers.
Yep. So that's really interesting. So it is pretty friendly.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy going. You know, you get some guys, well, you know, like every business, some people are analytical and some people are expressive, but I suppose you find the analytical ones are a little harder to, work with.
And so then you're saying you become pretty close with blokes like, say, Roger Davis and was it Wayne Grady and
a
Grades few others?
Yeah, and Roger. Roger and I travel together through Europe.
So is that struggling young pros travelling together, shacking up, saving your money together and playing the tour?
Pretty much, yeah. Nobody had a lot of money, I don't think. Roger had some backing from the guys in the markets. He used to work at the markets earlier on, and I think a lot of the guys put a bit of money in and backed him and helped him out.
And so I assume hardcore professionals training every day, staying off the grog, that sort of stuff?
No.
No? So what's the policy? So we're tournaments Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
So is it drink as much as you can Wednesday, so you don't have too much Thursday, or what's the play there?
No, all of the above. No, we you know, certain tournaments you'd be pretty solidly serious on, and I think it was a different time then. You know, it's just sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Everyone was getting into it.
Yeah, that's it.
So Rory's not getting smashed on day three, like.
No. It's like now it's all about health and fitness and weightlifting and, you know, performance values.
So
in the old days,
pizza, fish and chips, and a heap of beers on.
A lot of wine and.
A lot of wine.
Yeah, anything that moved with two legs and a heartbeat.
So
heartbeat was optional, by the way.
You see, the golfers these days have a lot of glamours following around. That's always been the case, I take it?
No. I think they were mainly fugglies in the days when we were there.
What, that didn't worry you too much, though?
No. I said
what about you, John? When did you get into it? What age were you when you started swinging?
The
club.
I'm glad you clarified that one. I started when I was 16.
Yep.
Started apprenticeship down in Sydney.
Sydney, right, yeah.
And lasted about 3 months before being persuaded to go back to school. Had some good results.
Yep.
And, of course, in those days, people encouraged you to go and get a trade or continue education. And it wasn't much seen as being a great value in hitting the golf ball in some people's families. So that was that.
Yeah,
but that was my passion. So. Yep. But I did that. I went off and finished going to education and went on and out to the commercial world for 35 years. At 48, decided in the middle of a board meeting that, hey, this is not what I want to do anymore. So I downed tools, walked out, trained for 2 years, went back to the PGA and said, want to join up again.
Yeah?
What, you were an engineer, is that right, before golf?
I started engineering, then moved over to psychology and ended up in marketing and computers.
During
your 40s, were you a casual golfer, you know, every second Sunday, that sort of stuff, or did you have a hit at all?
Well, with a young family, it was just weekend stuff. That was it.
So
and
just,
then
I'll
sneak out after work and have a bit of a hit. So except one occasion when I was run across Coops down at Twin Towns, Tweed Coolangatta.
Yep.
When they had the big Tui's events down there. I was out playing in the pro-am there and working for a very, very large company with a management that didn't really understand golf too much. Mm-hmm. And it was all televised.
Yeah.
So walking up the fairways, playing some couple of good shots into the 18th and then get a phone call saying, what are you doing there, instead of being at work?
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So that didn't go down too well in those days. So, no, we didn't play too much, but I had a reasonable handicap, nothing more than about 3 for 35 years.
Oh, so even when you're in your mid-40s, you're coming off a handicap of 2 or 3 and then 2 years hard practice to qualify for the over 50s tour.
Correct.
All right. Yeah, very good. But were you playing?
No, we'll go back to it. I mean, went back to PGA and said, I'll join up again.
Yeah.
They said, fine. Yeah, I was 35 years subs.
Oh, bullshit.
No, that's true.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have copped up though, would you?
No, so I went off to Q school.
Oh.
Hardest thing I've ever done as far as golf goes.
All right. So did you have to, because you were a touring pro, were you still playing through your 30s and 40s and then go straight into the over 50s?
No, I stopped I hurt my wrist in 79, British Open at St Andrews, and I tried to play on in Europe for a couple of years and just went broke doing it. You know, with injuries, it's... It was £1,000 a week, you know, and...
It cost you £1,000 a week to be there living and playing?
Yeah, I was running in at about £1,000 a week.
Wow.
So you go broke pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I actually got out. I got into corporate life as well. I did, into Yellow Pages,
Selling Yellow Pages. I don't think that's a business you'd want to be in these days.
No, well, that's gone. It's basically gone. Yeah. But it was very big in those days. The training was great.
Yeah.
So I was trained as a trainer and... yeah, it was all good fun. Mm. So we did that. Went on to Telstra and sold PABXs and then decided to get back to golf.
So did you get straight in at 50 or...?
Yeah, I started... when I turned 50, I think I went out and played a couple of events and I won about 3 of the first 5 I played.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And then I was working with Yamaha at the stage.
Mm. The pianos golf, or motorbikes?
Golf cars. Golf cars.
Okay,
golf carts, all right. Yeah. Neither of the Yamaha, I think pianos or what was the other thing I said?
Motorbikes.
Motorbikes.
So, yeah, that was an interesting time. So, but they didn't like me playing golf. a little bit like John.
Oh, yep.
So, which was crazy because that's what I did.
Yeah, you know, yep.
Was good PR for them, but yeah, and then I think I just played on after that. I left and, you know, I was averaging 4 or 5 wins a year on the senior circuit.
On the senior tour?
Mm.
Obviously a lot easier at 50 than, what is six? What did you say you were now, 60?
66.
Gee, it's funny, like I assume on the PGA Tour, the more experience you get, the easier, like, you know, it's much easier in your late 20s and early 30s than as a 17-year-old, but now it can only get harder and harder at the in the senior tour.
Well, you lose
tour.
A bit of distance, but my distance is still maintained reasonably well.
Yep.
And,
certainly has.
Then... you know, I'm still quite competitive. You know, when they turn the switch on to or the bell, you know.
So when you say you're quite competitive, today you seemed fairly relaxed. Today just no worries. So you can't. There is a switch.
Yeah, I play with it today. You know, just working out what I want to do and look for ideas.
Did we drag you down on fraction, maybe?
Yeah, totally.
It's definitely elevated our entertainment levels.
Well, I can't believe I was taking chipping lessons off you after that last couple down here. What are you doing giving me lessons?
Well, I mean, obviously the atmosphere got to me.
So now you guys are starting. So what? In a couple of weeks, you guys are starting what? The Queensland leg of the
Queensland leg. Yeah, it's there's about 18 tournaments, I think, or something like that in Queensland between next week onwards and about the 20th of August.
Yep.
They finish. So mainly one rounders, one, and then there's about 6 or 7 two-rounders or something in there between it.
So. All right, enough of that. Tell us, who, when you were back here in a young bloke, who were the loose blokes? Who did you want a room with, or who did you think, they're not going to make the cut, let's go out with them on Friday night sort of thing?
Well, we had... Oh, God. Well, the bad boys were Stanley, Ginn, Shearer.
Oh, yeah, Bob Shearer. Bob Shearer, he come across that. I remember watching him on the telly, and he came across as a bit of a larrikin.
Yeah, well, he was probably less orientated to play up than, say, Stanley or Guinea.
Yeah.
But I remember we were staying in Christchurch. Mm. The White Heron was playing at Rustley Golf Club, and White Heron's near the airport.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm with... Guinea and the Donk, which is Brian Jones, and that's another story. and the three of us were in this one room. So there's a queen bed, a double bed, and a fucking scout's bed.
Yeah,
so guess who got the scout's bed? So anyway, we're drinking Tia Maria and cream in those days. Oh, you know, they used to have Tia Maria and little cream top. So Guinea'd make an order, and there'd be four of us, so it'd be... I have 24 Tia Maria and cream. So Jonesy gets up. He'll, I think he was 36. So anyway, that was like the pro-am night. We've got to play golf the next day.
Yeah.
So anyway, after the pro-am, Guinea had picked up a bird. So, and we're in the room. And so I'm in bed. And Jonesy's in bed. And Jonesy's going, "Get fucker, Guinea, fucker," you know. And Guinea's going, "Shut up, I'm trying. Concentrate again." And I said, and then I'm down below and he's up there, and I said, "When you finish, can you roll her down here, mate?" So that's and then the next, on the Saturday night, because we all actually played, I think I won the pro-am.
That's ridiculous.
So how did we get on the seniors tour? Oh no, this is how old this is.
This is 23 or something.
Yeah, this is early 20s. Yeah, yeah. But
so,
go on.
On the Saturday night, a flight came in. I think, I'm not sure, with one of the airlines. Mm-hmm. So the room next door had a waterbed in it. So the next minute, all the flight staff are in there and they're fucking giggling away and carrying on. And, you know, it's raucous. And it's like 12 o'clock at night. So we ring up the manager and say, you know, tell him to shut up. Yeah, he knocks on the door, shut up. You know, 3 minutes later, they're all into it again, see? So Guinea gets out of bed, no clothes on, walks around the balcony, opens their fucking door, walks in, and he says, "What the fuck's going on in here?" You know, and the next minute, he's standing in a puddle of water. The waterbed had broken.
Oh.
Didn't see him for the rest of the night.
had he made the cut? Was he playing?
He was playing, yeah.
He was still playing?
Yeah, so, and the Donkers... the donk. Yeah, he was as bad as the rest.
And what about in Europe? You would have got up to some mischief over there. She would have been all. So you different countries. You're playing in France, Germany, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We were pretty good in most countries.
You would have found the foreigners are very German. People are very friendly.
Well,
the
we
German.
Like to test the water.
Yeah.
Now, that was the important part when you were playing. So because you had to keep occupied.
I bet you did.
You didn't want to go home, and go to bed because it makes a long night of it. So. We used to do things
like
in between.
What?
As many things as we could.
John, does this happen on the senior tour with you blokes, or you slow down a little bit?
They dream about it.
Well, mate, from, not a lot of personal experience during those years because I was doing something different. But after being on this tour now for 16 years and listening to a lot of the old stories, it's quite interesting to see how much some of these guys have actually improved in their experience, but not necessarily in their mental age.
Very good.
So what about, all right, let's get back to golf for a little bit. Golf. Like, a couple of questions. Holes in one. How many holes in one do you think you've had?
I've had six, five officially and one. Oh, I had one with you, didn't I?
So
six or seven.
So you're counting in tournaments?
No.
All up.
I think the closest I had was the Australian Open. 2 days in a row, they had you could win a Cessna or a Rolls-Royce.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember.
Is Cessna like a little aeroplane?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
So anyway.
Is your aeroplane?
It was the 10th, 11th, 12th, 10th. 11, 12, 13, the 14th hole, long par, a really reasonably long par three. And the first day, we thought it was in the hole because we couldn't see the ball.
Yeah.
The ball was like half an inch behind the hole
on
the flag stick. Yeah. Second day, same shot, an inch further back.
Oh, you're kidding.
2 days in a row, hit the left lip and the right lip, 2 days in a row.
I'm guessing a Rolls-Royce would have been fairly handy back then?
Would have been dynamic. So, and the other one... I hole out in Townsville on this short par three, and the ball plugged in the hole. This a quarter of an inch of the ball was above the ground level. No car.
Oh, bullshit.
Because you've got to fix the hole up and put the ball outside. Because the ball is above the level.
Yeah. Oh, that's bullshit.
Had the ball plugged below. Well, it wouldn't because the lip's only that big.
That was And yourself, John, you had a few?
I've had a few. Since joining back into the Legends or the Seniors, they've come a little bit more frequently. So
really?
I've had seven in this period since turning 50.
Wow.
That gives me hope.
Three in Asia.
Dream on.
No, just that someone over 50 can still have a hole. No, I don't know.
Okay.
So in Asia.
In Asia, and the last one was at a track called De Kent, which is a fairly reasonable sort of golf course over in
what
Asia.
What country were you in?
Thailand.
Yep.
And it was on a group of pro-am people that go over there, run by Richard Ellis. Tricky, we call him.
What are you doing in Thailand? That's what I
was going to say. I'm trying to work in Thailand stories.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of after-hours activity in Thailand, I assure you. There's a lot of people enjoying themselves there. But we managed to get out there and on a reasonably difficult hole. And the word had come through all the people driving around the place that we'd had, out of the group, two holes in one that day already on previous holes. And we came up to this hole, which is about 165 metres, all across water, big slopes, nothing behind, bunkers left, right and centre. And stepped up and a lot of people around watching and fortunately whacked it and in it went, which was great.
Yeah.
Get inside, find out that there's four holes in one on the day, all from the group.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh,
on four different holes. So that's quite interesting. And that was the last one in the tournament. But the second last one in the tournament was in Cambodia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At a very large course. It was owned by the Koreans. And they made a very big show of having the Legends there. It was 250 people. And they had commentators around the course. Oh, yeah. They were really pushing it well. And their signature hole is the eighth. It's a par three, 200 metres, beautiful hole, highish type of tee, sloping down to a large lake with a Japanese bridge that runs across the right-hand side.
Yeah, yep.
Up behind the Japanese bridge is a Japanese garden.
Yeah.
And the commentator there in this tournament, it was a four-day tournament, come around, this was the second day, and said, oh, yes, and we've got group number 27, Mr. Barrett's a professional from Australia, and we'd like to ask our professionals today what sort of shot they're going to play. So you can imagine, what the hell am I going to say here? So I said, well, I'm going to, it's a long hole, I'm going to take out a two iron, wind's coming slightly from the right, I'll hit it as high as I can, slightly draw it back in, land in the front of the green, let it check on because the pin's towards the back a little bit. No problems. He says, that's fantastic. Relays that to the crowd.
Yeah.
I step up, knife it, slice it across the water, hits the bridge, bounces off the bridge, hits the rocks, goes out, hits a tree, ends up on the front of the green. Everyone's in the crowd. I'm feeling sorry. This is very embarrassing. Mm-hmm. He turns around and says, I see that this professional from Australia likes to play trick shots. That's very good of you. Thank you very much. He sort of eased the situation. Next day, come along and says, as we're walking up, he says, there's Mr. Barrett and his group again. Who you got in your group today? All same people as yesterday. I'd like to tell you that this par three today has got the prize on it. It's sponsored by Mercedes and we have a vehicle. That's fantastic. He said, now, yesterday Mr. Barrett told us he was going to do this and he played a trick shot, went it, and he relayed the whole thing and the crowd's killing themselves laughing. What are you going to do today? And I said, today I'm going to take the same two iron, I'm going to aim at the bridge, I'm going to bounce it off the top of the bridge, hit the rocks, hit it on the back tree, onto the green. Said, right, said, now we'll see what he does today. Stood up, flew it in the hole, two iron, took the ace.
Bang. Oh, you're kidding.
That's not kidding. Yep, that's exactly as it was. Beautiful. The place goes erupts. Not. Next thing you know, down the fairway comes this entourage of cars.
Yeah.
He's put a call into the clubhouse.
Yep.
There's cameras, there's people, there's trucks, there's everything coming. Yeah. I'm thinking, you beauty, Mercedes, what have we got here? Some sort of sports car.
What'd you get?
Get up to the presentation, won a vehicle, a tuk-tuk.
Oh, bullshit. You're kidding.
A tuk-tuk. So just a tuk-tuk.
Oh, I would have lost it. I would have lost me.
Where's the tuk-tuk?
A tuk-tuk went to the local charity.
Oh, gee. I can't do that to you. Oh, you would have been thinking beautiful. Fantastic. Big Miss Elegance Mercedes thing. Ah, that's terrible. Terrible. A few other things. So, best round. What have you had a 59? You've had a 60?
No,
what's your best?
61.
61?
Yeah.
And when you're having a 61, are you just thinking, oh, I'm just lacing everything? You're sort of in the groove or you don't...
No, you're just thinking he's missed a few numbers. Hey, where's the 69 coming?
You keep talking, I'm going to get some more beers. You hold forward.
No worries. So you're just right in the groove? Are you noticing that you're having a...
notice it, but generally when you get on a roll, you either pull up or you go.
Yeah,
you know, it's the way it is, I suppose. But I've always not worried too much about going under.
Yeah.
So if you, I think if you go under and you just you don't look for escapes.
Yep.
You actually only look at the hole.
Yep.
That's the only thing, you know, it doesn't matter what sort of iron shot you got into the green, the hole is the objective and you generally knock it 8 or 10 feet away. And
yep.
So on a good day, you roll...
You're just rolling the putts in.
You'll hole a bunker shot, roll a couple of long putts in and then stiff it.
Yep, and then all of a sudden you think, bang, I've had 61 sort of thing.
Well, I can tell you, I know his best day.
Yeah, what was?
Because I'm sitting in the clubhouse with a 63.
Oh, yeah.
And who comes rolling down with a 62?
Oh, no, that'd hurt, wouldn't it?
Oh, that hurts.
Does it hurt more than it would you, mate? Would you prefer it to be a stranger or...?
No, because you always wish the best for everyone. But yes. It was at a funny course. It was in Brisbane, out at Woolston Park.
Oh, okay.
Who remembers that?
Yeah,
I'm getting excited because this is the big opportunity for the bloke that's come in outside, the amateur, the outsider.
Yep.
Sitting there thinking this is glory days.
No,
not for long.
Not for long, that'll be... What about any real days just got away from you? Even when you were like younger, do you ever have like an 87 on an Australian Open or a PGA? Shockers?
I finished... I think the worst feeling I had was probably I played with Devlin in the last round of the Australian Open and I've three putted the last four greens in a row at the Aussie to run 10th.
To run 10th? Wow. Yeah.
So
you're looking at a top three finish.
Yeah, probably. And I've hit it pretty good too. I three putted from 10 feet twice in the...
Were they like glass or was it...
No, the greens were good. I just attacked and
failed to... And so, are you, when, see, as a kid watching the TV, when that's happening, they're telling us, oh, that's just cost him another couple of thousand. That's just not cost him. That's not running through your mind out on the course, though, is it?
No.
You're just thinking, geez, I've three-putted. That was silly. Let's
you
get
don't
the next
count
one.
The money out there. Yeah. Basically, you're just, you know, you're in a different zone altogether.
Yeah.
You know, when you're playing good, you're in your own little world.
Yep.
So generally, it's all about numbers. You just, how far is it? How far is it over the bunker? What's it, is it down grain or into the grain for the second, you know, the shot into the green? And
you, now, you obviously had a caddy when you were playing on there.
Yeah.
Is that just an old mate that played a bit, or is there where do you get a caddy from?
I had a fellow out of Sydney. He'd caddied for Stan Peach, who was quite a good tour player early in the 60s.
Yeah.
And he came out and he said, oh, I want a caddy for you. So he did, and... Because in the old days, you know, you didn't go to the practice fair and hit golf balls and walk away. You actually had your own practice balls.
Yeah.
So they used to stand down there on the practice fairway and they'd put a towel around their hand and they'd catch the balls. So you just start off with, you know, like 50 wedges and you'd just stand there and catch
them. Go bang, 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 bang. Yep.
And then they'd go back and they're catching full drivers. Yeah. A whole lot. So it was interesting.
When you boys are, like you were saying earlier, like you and Roger Davis and that are travelling together, what are your caddies doing?
Travel together. They don't travel with us.
So the caddies travel as caddies?
Yeah, a lot of them travel on their own in groups and then because they're generally backpacking.
Yep. So and they're just on, what, 10% of prize money sort of thing?
They were on a money plus percentage.
Yeah, all right. Just missing the caddy stuff.
Well, you're living in New Zealand now. So
that's correct.
One of the most well-paid sportsmen in New Zealand was someone's caddy.
Yes, it was. Yeah, well, Williams or something, isn't it?
Stevie Williams.
Yeah, Stevie Williams. Yeah. New Zealand's highest-paid athlete was because he was Tiger's caddy, and then he got Adam Scott's bag as well, wasn't it?
He did. But he started off with he was with Norman.
Oh, was he?
And the first caddying job he had was for Craig Owen, Simon Owen's brother. Simon Owen ran second in the British Open.
Yep.
Craig is on the Legends. Simon's on the Legends.
Oh, yep.
And Simon was a very, very interesting sort of a character player, a tall sort of a bloke.
Yep.
Could hit at a country mile. Couldn't putt for toffee in the early days. And but down at things like the Palm Meadows Cup, where Roger was frequently a winner, people like Simon were talking $100,000 back in the early 80s. It was some very big money back then.
Yeah. Now, there was what us young blokes argue about all the time, but probably don't know enough about is, because we didn't see Jack enough, Tiger or Jack?
Two different eras? Yeah. I think when you look at the quality of the fields, I still think Jack was probably the better player.
Yeah, yep.
Long term, overall, everything.
Yeah. I'm in the Jack camp as well. I'm not a Tiger. I don't like Tiger.
But then the most brilliant player ever has been Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
I think probably closely followed by Seve.
I was going to say Seve, but it was...
Yeah, and then closely followed by Norman.
Yep.
Probably, you know, but they're the top great hitters, but probably one of the... best strikers of the ball I've ever seen was Hale Irwin.
Hale Irwin, I remember. He won a US Open as a fairly old fella, didn't he?
No, he was in his 20s, I think.
Oh, I thought he might have been in his 40s when he won one.
I watched him practice at Royal Melbourne. His caddy was standing there. That was in the days when the caddies used to catch the ball.
Yeah.
And he'd be hitting a driver and the caddy was only moving 1 yard. And then he'd put his hand up and he'd go... twice with his fingers, which is 10 yards. The caddy had moved back 10 yards and his swing didn't change.
Oh.
And the guy's still catching the ball.
Bang, bang,
just
bang.
Exactly the same. It was like you couldn't pick any difference in the power that he put into it. Just the ball just seemed to go further.
Oh, wow. Do you have thoughts on the Tiger Jack argument and that sort
I
of
do,
stuff
actually,
as well?
Yeah, I'm with Jack.
Yeah, good.
And I think although the era is different, the equipment was different,
their
mechanics and their abilities were... from a physical point of view, a little bit different. I mean, Jack was outstanding in his strength characteristics and the way he could manipulate the ball.
Yep.
But
he's
probably just as mentally strong as Tiger, although Tiger was trained to be extremely mentally strong.
Yep. Do we probably underappreciate Greg Norman a little bit just because he didn't have the huge number of majors?
I totally, yeah. I mean, he had, I don't know how long he was world number one, but it was a hell of a long time.
360 weeks or something. I mean, it was outrageous.
And there was at a stage where everyone was just teeing up to run second.
Yeah, yep.
When he'd go out. And he was an enigma, pretty much like Woods.
Yep.
And the sad thing is that he got pipped once or twice major tournaments, which made a massive difference to the following tournaments, the following majors, I think.
And his overall legacy.
He became the unlucky loser, you know, and that's that was something that was pretty sad because, I mean, he's not overly likable as a person.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bit of a driver come person, so it was never he was never one charismatic like Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus, but great player, great driver of the golf ball.
He was the one I grew up watching, and it was just amazing, I thought. But he said just because he didn't quite have the two majors instead of eight or nine like he could have, that might get forgotten in history a little bit.
That's hard to appreciate how good he was, because if you actually were walking the ropes with him, to see that man strike the golf ball with a wooden club with such precision and such distance, and it was unbelievable. Yep. And I mean, he was recognised for it around the world.
Yep. So you seen me driving the ball today, right? Not very far and all over the place. How would have I went today if I had one of those old wooden persimmons today?
You'd still be out there.
He'd probably be out there, but he'd only have shafts. It wouldn't be a good earth on the head.
Because we're actually going to do that. We've actually been talking about going back home and getting a set of those old clubs and actually going out and having a round and see how much of a difference it makes. Maybe some old golf balls and that sort of stuff.
So if you're going to have, say you're just playing a relaxed nine holes and we're going to have 36 or 7, would the wooden clubs make much difference to you? Would it turn a 37 into a 42 or something? And blokes at your sort of level?
You know, if I were to have a set of the old set of golf clubs and an old golf ball.
Yeah, those old bladders. They were like a squash ball, weren't they?
I'd need 6 weeks on the practice fairway to realign what you want to do with your swing. Because at the moment, you know, because of the technology of heads golf balls, you can tend to do a lot more, you know, at whatever pace you want to. But with the timber headed golf clubs, you had to be you had to work the ball a hell of a lot more.
You didn't have the old. You're not old enough to have the old hickory shafts, were you?
No, but I used to use them.
Yeah.
Because I did my apprenticeship at Royal Sydney, and nearly all the members still had them then.
Oh, really?
They're too bloody tight to buy anything else.
There you go. What a couple of entertaining blokes. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to that as much as we enjoyed hanging and playing with those guys. We're going to end part one of the Legends interview here, but be sure to tune in next week for part two of the interview, where we're going to pick right up from where we left off. So until then, thanks for listening. And as always, I'm going to hand it over to Hornsby in the Range. Chili Lippers out.
Sticky on the back where the grass don't grow. Gonna take a few hacks. That's a place for you if you're just like me. Armchair bridge yelling at the TV. You have enough cool one, but it won't hurt. Got myself a big stick swinging in the dirt. I got a two-bit job with a little bit of pay, but I'm no pressure, couple lessons a day. We're working on the swing and talking trash.